بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Last night we were discussing the zawq of our elders. Zawq means, in English you'll say, the literal translation is taste. But the actual meaning is the thought, the type of thinking, the outlook. Now that's zawq. What was the outlook? What was their thought? How did they look at things? So this is called zawq. You see one single thing, it's one and the same thing, but you'll find different people approaching that in different ways, right? So this differences of approach is on account of the taste, it's on account of the thought. Example, if someone's father were to come here, right? Say, you didn't beat your father for 1 year or 2 years, right? And he had come. So you will get up, you may hug him, you may kiss him, you will show him a nice respectful place and you will seat him down. Now this is one type of zawq, it's one type of thought. And the other thought is, like how you have some people say, well, he's a man, we are men now, why should we show this additional respect for this man? This gesture of respect, why should it be shown? So this is a different type of a thought. So this original thought, this thought that was inherited from our elders, that type of thought, to let it run through in our lives. What were their ways? How did they look at things? How did they relate to situations? What was their way of thinking? What were their mannerisms? Not that they are the Nabi or they are Sahaba, but really they understood the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the Sahaba Ikram far better than we understand them. So because they were closer to Allah Ta'ala's Nabi and his Sahaba, so therefore we take them as a yardstick, we take them as people that we can safely emulate and follow. There's numerous incidents that have been reported in this today's. One incident that speaks about is about that Abdul Rahman, right? That's also something thought-provoking, something for us to think about. Sheikh had made his Islah. For a long period, kept him in the Khanqah, made his Islah, corrected him, rectified him, and brought the type of mold that he wanted in him. And when he saw that the mold was prepared, or the type of thought that I wanted in him, I see it already in him. Right? Now he sent him off, he said, now you can make tabligh in Multan. Right? Now this thought is very important, you may take it lightly, but if you don't have that type of thought, you're going totally off. You need to understand temperament, understand mannerism. One person employed someone, says, you know what, you must just be my attendant. wherever I go, you must be my attendant. Alright, so now he's riding on his horse and he got him as an attendant. So he covered some miles. So the station that he had to stop over, he discovered that his expensive silk shawl is missing. But what happened? Where's that shawl of mine? He says, no, you know, 5 miles away, the thing dropped, you see. Then why didn't you pick it up? Why didn't you notify me? Well, he took out the list of work that was given to him. This is not in the list that if anything falls behind, I must pick it up or I must notify you. So I didn't notify you, I didn't bring it to your attention, and nor did I pick it up. It was not in the list. Alright. So the boss got very, very upset about the whole thing. He says, whatever falls behind, must pick that up as well. Now they move on. They come to the next station, and this man has got a big parcel. Big parcel he's got. So the boss asks him, what is this parcel? So he opened it up, it's full of dung. So why did you bring this? So now you wrote in the list that whatever falls behind, I must pick it up. So now this thought, you see, that he can't think right, he can't understand, he can't relate. Now this being able to relate and understand, placing things in place, this is very important. When you are in a work environment, then you want someone that can relate very easily. Get this, do this, get that, right? So he must understand your ishara and kinaya. He must understand the small signs that you show. He must just be able to do it. And if he can't do it, then you can't cope with that work. You got tons of work lying by you, and this person doesn't understand small signs. You don't understand. You know, get this, don't do this, get this like this. He doesn't understand that. Now how are you going to get your work done? So the work can function, you can move, if that person has got your thought, he understands. As I say, that one person, was going in a wedding party. You know, in India they have this wedding party, they call it Bharat. So the wedding party, they go and receive the groom, they go and receive the bride, you see. So obviously the bride will be from a different gram, and the groom will be from a different gram. So this party is going to fetch the bride. Now, it is normal the groom wears some special type of clothing, rumal or something must wear. So he becomes conspicuous. Oh, this is the groom. See, this is a groom. So now he didn't have that. He was wearing just ordinary simple clothing, and he didn't have that special shawl, whatever it is, to make him known that he is the groom. So anyway, people have that desire to see the bride and the groom also. They may have seen the bride also for years, and they may have seen the groom also for many years. But on the day of the marriage, they want to see who's the groom and who's the bride. They want to see that. After one day, everything is finished then. After one day, the groom or the bride also thinking, hey, everybody's eyes was on me yesterday. Today, everything is lost. Yesterday they were coming to meet me, they were throwing flowers on me, all that was being done to me. Today everything is lost. So it's a habit with people that the bride and the groom, they want to see children, okay, big or everybody, anybody. So one person, as they're passing in place, someone is asking, who is the groom? Meanwhile, the groom didn't have that shawl, you see. So another person had that shawl, and he lent the shawl to this groom. So they're asking now, who is the groom? So this man says, this is the groom, but the shawl belongs to me, actually. So anyway, now the father of the groom came to know that this person here said this. He said, but why do you have to mention this? Why do you just mention that this shawl belongs to you? So no, I really made a mistake. Apologize, next time I won't do it. They move on. So they come across another person. Says, who is the groom? So this is the groom, but the shawl doesn't belong to me. Now they move on again. Father again gets mad with this man. Yeah, what's wrong with you, boy? Why you have to keep bringing that story? So they pass the third person, and third person is asking now, who's the groom here? No, this person is the groom, but don't ask about the shawl. Is doshala ka poocho mat? Don't ask about it. So they don't have that original thinking, you know, right thinking, understanding, concept. We don't have it. Then you'll try to do things, perhaps. Perhaps your niyat will be there, but you just don't have it. You don't have the understanding. You don't know how to process things. So you can upset people, and you won't be able to relate that original thought, the thought of the Buzurgan Adeen, what they wanted, how they wanted it. That is why in fiqh there is one term that they use. Sometimes to use this term, masalihaya mursala, to understand the mansha of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And masalihaya mursala, I used to say, is above sunnat and muakkada and less than wajib. In other words, to understand what was the mansha of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, he made a certain statement, or he issued a certain command. Right? For example, he allowed the woman to come and attend the masjids, right? To perform the namaz in the masjid. He allowed that. Now there'll be several types of Sahaba Ikram. There will be Sahaba Ikram that are totally new. They just come now, right? And there will be those Sahaba Ikram that were old, that had been coming to Rasulullah SAW all the time. And then there'll be those Sahaba Ikram that understand, have got a deep sense of understanding. They can apply things very correctly. Now, obviously, those that are new, or those that do not have that level of understanding, they can't be compared with those who have a deep sense of sight, understanding and vision. Both vision are totally different, poles apart. The sight, the understanding is totally poles apart. So that is why they say that if this class of people, if they understood something from Rasulullah Pasam's statement, they understood something and they made a command, they issued a command, then that command will be not less than sunnat muakkada and not above wajib, in between wajib and sunnat muakkada. Now the examples for it is, Hazrat Aisha radiallahu anha says, you know, Hazrat Aisha lived with Rasulullah for approximately 9 years, and the senior sahaba ikram is to go and refer to her, what do you have to say about this, you heard anything, you learned anything from Rasulullah in this matter or not. So as Aisha says, radiallahu anha, that had Rasulullah SAW only been alive and he seen what the women have invented nowadays, you know, type of clothing, attire, etc., what they have done nowadays, then he wouldn't have allowed them to come to the masjid. As the women of the Bani Israel had been prevented from attending the masjids, then he would have prevented this woman as well. Now that requires understanding. There is the hadith that says, لا تمنعوا إماء الله مساجد الله. Don't prevent women from entering the masjid. Understood translation. Don't prevent women from the masjid. But Aisha, what she's saying, that had Rasulullah been alive and he had seen what this woman have done nowadays, then he would have definitely prevented them from entering the masjid. Now this was based on her understanding, her deep understanding and vision. Now there are several things to understand this, then you appreciate the hadith. The one thing is this, that the new, this woman of this generation, they don't know exactly under what circumstances Rasulullah SAW had allowed women to attend the masjid. They don't know. Right? Rasulullah SAW did allow them, but he allowed them that they come to the masjid, وَهُنَّ تَفِيلَاتِ, coming in an untidy way, no fragrance, nothing, shabbily looking, no unattractive clothing, and they come into the masjid. Right? Now the women know that they've been allowed to come to the masjid, but they do not know that perhaps they were asked to dress up like this and come to the masjid. You know, and women have it that when they're going out, they must dress up very well. That's their tabiat, that's their nature. You tell a woman, you know, go out, just go out like that in your old clothes. She can't do it. She can't do it. It's impossible for her to do it. Every function, she must wear a new set of clothing. New set of clothing, new set of shoes, everything she must have new. Otherwise, what will people see? There's only one set of clothing you got. So that's woman's mizaj, that's their tabiat. Now they're going to wear that attractive clothing and they're going to go frequent the masjids. What's going to happen? Obviously, they'll become a means of fitna. People will watch them and that becomes a fitna afterwards, eventually. So Rasulullah, in his zamana, this fitna wasn't there. They were taking all the precaution. Now, with the passage of time, as Aisha has seen, now these type of precautions are no longer being taken. Number one. Number two, now look at our situation. Alright, our situation, or any country for that matter today, this day and in current times, you know, any country. Right? A woman can be wearing her best attire and she can be applying perfume and fragrance. Has anybody got that type of strength and willpower to go and stop them from attending? She's right at the entrance of the masjid, go back, go home. Has anybody got the willpower to do it? See? They will take out a protest march. You know, Rasulullah SAW allowed it. They'll come to the Al-Ummah magazine, An-Nisa magazine, they'll come and they'll give it to you. Rasulullah SAW allowed it. And this man here in the 14th, 15th century, he's not allowing it. He's gone above Rasulullah SAW also. So how they'll present it, see? So tell me, anybody has got that type of power and authority to go and stop them? Don't have that authority. So now, on the one end, they can't practice the hadith. The other end, you can't make Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al Munkar onto them. Now what is the safest thing for them? The third thing is that there is a fitna. Obviously, they're going to come and go to the masjid. They're going to frequent the masjid. I mean, there are situations that happen even to this day where a boyfriend and a girlfriend, they are walking to the masjid hand in hand. She goes into the woman's section and he goes into the men's section. They're coming out together. Like how, you know, you go to a hall. They're going together and coming out together. They just go and take their seats differently, but they're coming out and going. So then the masjid becomes a center of entertainment. Like how you have these churches. You ask many of these people that attend the church, they say, so now we just go to see those girls at the church. You know, they singing the chorus and all that. They're hymning away. So we enjoy that, you know. So a little bit of entertainment we get. So what will be the masjid then? It will be an entertainment center. So on the one end, we don't have the type of structures to prevent them. These women have started off a lot of things. Right? Now you just go... At any time, you'll see who dressed up, see how they're dressed up. Whether they're driving or whether they're on the street, see that abaya, the cloak that they got. Even they got that cloak, but it's a different type of cloak. It's an attractive cloak. Anybody can get attracted. They're walking and they're walking with the type of shoes. Click, 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 click. That also is a shaitanic, this thing. Shaitan is attracting men, he's creating, he's inducing this type of inciting men. So that fitna, you don't have that strength and that ability to control that fitna. So Aisha, she's seen this, she saw it already, that this, we won't be able to manage it, we won't be able to control it. Right? And she had that vision. She lived with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, so she knows the original thought. What was Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's thought? What was his desire? Right? Many people may have not got that type of thought, but because of a cause, affinity with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, she knew what Rasulullah wants. Right? So she says, no, if Nabi was alive today, he would have stopped them. So this type of command, I will say, it's above sunnat and muakkada, and emphasize sunnat, but we won't give it the level of, we won't give it the command of wajib, because wajib needs a command, a direct, explicit command of Rasulullah. So you won't give it a hukam or the rule of wujub, but we'll say it is definitely above sunnat and muakkada. Now you see, in our environment, we don't have women coming to the masjid, right? So don't you see it to be a cleaner environment where there's no woman coming in? Now you imagine if this, you sitting, you on one end making itikaf, they making itikaf on the other end. Right? I'm telling you of real situations where it can happen. There was this woman sitting in the same masjid, making itikaf, having talim all together. Some cubicles women, some cubicles men. Now what happens? So now they say, well, the Azwaj Mutahharat also sometimes they also had made itikaf with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So if they can make itikaf, why can't we make itikaf? You see, that the thought isn't there, that original thought, that type of thinking, that type of taste, that type of understanding wasn't there. Now you can imagine if you're sitting in an environment 1 month like this, and there's a woman parking here, you this idea, what can happen? You can trigger problems, big problems. Forget 1 month, even 10 days, I say. Yeah? You'll create problems for yourself. For everybody, you'll create problems. So this was Aisha radiallahu anha's far-sightedness. And if any person that's got some sense and understanding and reasoning, not biased, he'll be able to appreciate this, that though Rasulullah did not prevent them, but looking at the circumstance, looking at the environment, what's going on today, if Rasulullah was alive, he would have definitely forbidden them from this. He would have not allowed them. So, if you don't look at the thing holistically, entirely, completely, and say, no, these people here, they're going against Bukhari Sharif. This hadith comes in the Bukhari Sharif, and they're going against it. Who is more important? Imam Abu Hanifa or Bukhari Sharif? Or Rasulullah, who's important? You listen to Rasulullah or you listen to... So now, the way they present the whole thing, that the common man says, hey, if I'm going to say what Abu Hanifa says, for example, then I'll be leaving out Rasulullah. I'll be out of faith. Then what will happen to me? So he can't assimilate and he can't put the facts together. When he can't put the facts together, he gets in a gabrat situation. He says, no, I must listen to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So to be able to understand hadith and Quran Sharif, etc., you can't just take one hadith here, there, at random, and then just make a decision. Look at it holistically, understand so many things. For example, now, the Taraweeh namaz, like it's read presently, right? So in the day of Rasulullah, it wasn't read like how it's read nowadays. There is just one record that on one day or three nights, I think the 23rd, 25th and 27th night, Rasulullah stood up. And it wasn't the whole of Medina Munawara. You can't show that the whole of Medina Munawara is there for the Taraweeh namaz. See? Thereafter, Umar radiallahu anhu came in. He understood what was the mansha of Rasulullah. He understood. And he understood the reason why Rasulullah did not do it in congregation as well. He didn't do it in congregation because he feared that it will become compulsory. But he wanted it to happen. And then Umar understood many other things. He understood that Rasulullah also wanted the Quran Sharif to be preserved, obviously. Deen will be preserved if the Quran Sharif is preserved. And the only way to get it preserved is to let them recite it in Taraweeh namaz. So the whole deen will be preserved in this manner. Now, all these things have to be put together. Now, a man like Umar radiallahu anhu, he understands. He understood it. He understood that what was Nabi Sam's mansha. So he presents it to the Sahaba Ikram, and there is consensus. Now, on the one hand, you say that there's no evidence for this. There's no evidence for this. Right? And then you see now, you look at the whole story, and you'll find, no. If you look at it completely, entirely, you look at it, there is some strong support for this action and for this to continue. Like, for example, the Quran Sharif itself, it wasn't in one single book, right? It wasn't in one single book. Now, there was one war, Yamama or something, and many of the Qurra, Qaris, were killed, made shaheed. How they made shaheed, Umar goes to Abu Bakr, you know what, if there's going to be one, two more wars like this, then I fear that all these Qaris are going to die, right? And when they'll die, they'll take away the Quran Sharif also with them. So what's going to be left after that? So Abu Bakr says to him, then how can you do a thing which Rasulullah has not instructed? So Umar radiallahu anhu didn't lead Abu Bakr into a lengthy discussion. He says, no, this is right. We'll have to do it. Hatta sharah Allah sadra Abi Bakr. Now Allah Ta'ala opened up the heart of Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. Said, no, this is the right thing. This is the way we need to go. This is how we need to take it. Initially he couldn't understand it. But when he reflected, he said, no, this was the desire. This would be the mansha of Nabi Sallam. He would want it. He'll want the preservation, the protection of the Quran Sharif. Definitely. And Bazaar, apparently, there is no other way to protect it and guard it. How else are we going to guard it? If it's going to remain in the hearts of people, and these people are martyred, so then how is the Quran Sharif going to be protected and guarded? So we'll need to preserve it in one place. That with the passage of times, people are going and moving on to different lands, they'll need to have some Quran Sharif, they'll need to have some book with them. A book of guidance now. How do they take it? Where do they get it from? So they were careful in that respect as well, not to introduce anything into deen. But they also looked at it in this respect, that what was the desire, what was the mansha of Rasulullah in anything, in everything. What did he desire, what he wanted. Now this is the most important thing in deen, to understand, to be able to understand this. Now, this mansha and this desire, it cannot be achieved by just reading books. See, you just read books, you know, as literate as you may be, and as widely read as you may be. But until you don't achieve that thought, you will not be able to move along. You will not be able to move along. That thought must be acquired. What was that fikr? What was their concern? What was the desire? What was their outlook towards deen? Otherwise, what will happen? I'll just show you how it will just, it'll take a somersault. Just take a... Now, if you say, for example, all right, we just need people, experts, you know, for example, in hadith now, or tafsir, we need experts. Then you start off a department of tafsir in a madrasa or in a university. Now, The outlook of the student will be what? What will be the outlook of that student that is in that department? He will look at the person that is specializing in a university or in a college in a certain department, right? Well, this is a subject, they learnt it and I learned this. It will just remain, it will become like one of the subjects that have been offered and I specialized in it, right? So what will happen of your deen? Your deen will be just a thing in it'll be a thing of theory, and the practice of it, the understanding, the depths, and the fervor that you need to have of deen, that will be washed out. See? You're taking it as a business, as a profession. That this is something that I need to specialize in. I specialized in it, and that's all. So you'll take it at two levels. You'll take it at the first level. You'll take it. You'll specialize in it. Second level, you'll take it. You will write something, a thesis on it, or a book on it. And at the third level, then they'll say, "No, your theses are very good, so now we give you a doctorate." Then at the fourth level, then they'll say, "All right, now you come and give a lecture in the university." Now, what else? What has happened to your deen? Are you able to preserve the deen in its pure form? You can't. The deen can only be preserved in its pure form if it's got the right type of environment. Then will the deen be preserved in the pure form. Otherwise you'll just have it in theory, and really you won't have the spirit of deen. The spirit is lost. So you need the spirit, the truth, thinking and the knowledge. Both. Now both, when both one complements the other, then you're taking it in the right and the true direction. So these incidents have been related. Hazrat's Rahmatullah Alayhi's whole mansha looks like in this, to understand these people, right? What was their outlook? How did they look at it? They looked at things differently. Now the Shaykh has prepared his murid. Go on to Multan and go and spread Dind. So on the way comes Panipat. Panipat is not very far from Delhi. Maybe I think within an hour you may reach there, or less than an hour. Now in Panipat there was one yogi. Now they do spiritual exercises and arts. They train themselves and they can cast spells onto people. You know, they can make you imagine something. They can cast, they can hypnotize you, they can mesmerize you. They can do these type of things. They train themselves. It doesn't have to be relating to magic or jadu. No, it is just a type of a training that they go through, and they can suppress you with that spell. They can suppress you, as strong as you are, they can suppress you. Right. So now he's passing here, and this yogi, he cast a spell onto this person here, but he sees that he's not responding. You know, when you cast a spell, the person must respond, but he's not responding. Like you shoot someone and that person must die. Now you're shooting and that person not dying. See, that casting of a spell is just like shoot. It's so powerful, it's very, very powerful. You know, there's people that train up in there, you ask them, they can drop an elephant down. Forget a man, they can drop an elephant just with the movement of the eye. They train themselves, they bring themselves to such a position that they can drop an entire elephant down. So, the thing that you learn from this is also that you sometimes we get into a josh, now I got iman. Hey, I can take on anybody. You speak according to your strength, according to your capacity you speak. Don't speak beyond your capacity. See, there comes in the hadith that when Dajjal will appear, there'll be some ulama that will say, alright, let's go and challenge him. And they'll become victims. They'll be ulama. And they'll say, let's go and challenge the man. And here they turn out to be victims. So you take an opposition that's within your power. You don't take someone that's beyond you. Someone that's above you, more stronger than you, and you take him on. He'll suppress you. He'll push you down just now. See? You don't know, you come under his spell. You come under his. You get suppressed by him. The better way, the safer way is the way of afiyat, you just go look after yourself. The one that is really blessed with that strength, he will be able to do it. Hazrat Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, he and was accompanied by his murid, Mawlana Ismail Shaheed and Mawlana Abdul Hayy Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. And they come going through a Hindu festival, a fair, you see. Not a festival, a fair. So Sayyid Sahib's whole work was Dawat. His whole life, like Omar Ilyas Sahib's whole life was Dawat. Sayyid Sahib's work was Dawat. Alright. Sayyid Sahib did it in a different style. Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullah did it in a different style. And like Sayyid Sahib's work also lasted for some time, at least 80, 90 years it lasted. The effects of it lasted. And Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullah's work also it's already 80, 90 years. About 80 years I think. From 1930 started. So about 77 years. So Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh asked Mawlana Ismail, going to the fair, aur dekho ke koi kaam ke aadmi bhi wahan par hai ya nahi, that you can get someone and you can work on him. So Sayyid Sahib, Mawlana Ismail Sahib, they went. So now ek aadmi kaam ke hai. There is one person that you can take out some work from him. You can influence him. So Sayyid Sahib went there and both saw now that they got some spiritual power. Both identified. He's got some spiritual power and I got spiritual power as well. So Sayyid Sahib just did this and he brought a freshly plucked mango. That Hindu also did this and a freshly plucked mango he brought it. From nowhere he brought it. Alright. So Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, again he did this and he brought a glass, small glass. He also brought a glass. He did this again and he brought a knife. He did the same, he got a knife as well. So So now both are equal to each other, you see. And Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullahi, he cut open, he slashed his wrist, right, and he poured that blood into that container. So he did the same, he slashed his wrist and he poured the blood into the container. Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullahi then took that blood and he buried it into the ground. He took that blood and he buried it to the ground. He did the same. After an hour or so, he pulled it out. Sayyid Sahib's blood was smelling with musk. Very, very fragrant. And this person's blood, after the hour that they pulled it out, was already decaying and the worm was already into it. So Sayyid Sahib then told him, see, on the surface of this earth, presently, we seem to be identical. But when you go down, this will be my condition and this will be your position. Outwardly, until this point, we seem to be identical in spiritual power. Right? But underground, then this is what's going to be your position, this is going to be my position. Right? This Jalaluddin, Hazrat Jalaluddin Rahmatullahi, Thanesari, right? He also saw one of these Hindu fairs, right? So he had a lot of Jalal in him. Lot of Jalal. Some Zughanuddin bin, you have like Ahmad Parak, lot of Jalal he got. Some have Jamal, some have Jalal. So he hears of this Hindu fair and people from all parts of India have collected for this. Now we have Urus and all that, they have all something like that. What's going on, you know, this one Hindu, Pandit, whatever it is, he dives into the earth, he dives here, and 100 meters away he'll come out. He'll dive and he'll go underground, like how you'll dive in underwater. He dives into the earth, he goes right 100 meters and he comes out from the other end. So Jalaluddin Thanesi Rahmatullahi, he heard about this. When he heard about this, alright, let me see where he does this. He went onto the crowd and he said, oh, he went to this place here. As he just dived, he put his leg inside. On that place, on the spot he put his foot. Now they're waiting for him to come out from that other side. 1 hour passed, 2 hour passed, no sign. They found him dead in that same place. Or there was a masla after that. Is he guilty of murder? Is he guilty of murder? So you won't say he's guilty of murder. It was an Islamic land at that time, right? And this person is misleading people to jadu. And a jadu, a magician, must be killed, right? So he met Amr bin Ma'ruf, he killed him. Because hundreds of people's faith would have been affected. So one person had to go to guard other people's faith, you see. So these things carried on. These things carry on. But what I'm saying is, we need to be careful as well. We don't have that strength now. Sayyid Sahib had that strength, he had that power. Jahuddin Thanesi had that type of power. You go and say, no, Jahuddin Sahib did this, so I can do it also. Imitate him. Yeah. You have the power, it's alright. They say of Imam Malik Rahmatullahi, the princess was affected with some jinn, you see. So they came to Imam Malik Rahmatullahi that she's affected with some jinn. Take my shoe. Just take my shoe. That shoe was enough to make shoe for the jinn. The jinn went away. Now, some days later, Imam Malik Rahmatullahi had gone or somewhat or whatever must have happened, and that princess got affected with the jinn again. You know, the jinnas, they have that tabiat. They go and come. You know, they say, Zubab, Zubba, Kullama, Zubba, Aba, Zubba, Aba. You chase it, it comes back. So that's the tabiat of the jinnas. You chase it, it comes back again. So now they call for Imam Malik again. And Imam Malik was gone. So the student seen this whole scene, you see. He seen the whole scene. He said, oh, just take my shoe. So the jinn said, this is the first time you're doing it, the first chance. But don't ever try doing this again. تمہارا دماغ سے صحیح کر دے گی ہم. سو یو ڈونٹ ہیو دیٹ اسٹرینتھ, یو ڈونٹ ٹرائی دس ٹائپ آف تھنگس. یو ہیو دیٹ اسٹرینتھ, یو ہیو دیٹ ایبلٹیز, آل رائٹ, یو کین, یو ہیو دیٹ اسٹرینتھ. اللہ پاک ہیز گیون یو دیٹ ٹائپ آف اسٹرینتھ, دیٹ ٹائپ آف پاور. یو گاٹ آل یور ڈیفینسز, دین یو ٹرائی, یو گو انٹو اٹ. بٹ یو ڈونٹ ہیو دیٹ ڈیفینس, دین یو ڈونٹ ٹرائی. دین عافیت کے گوشے کو حاصل کرو, دین یو ریمین ان یور اون سیکلوژن. You work according to your potential, according to your ability. If Allah Ta'ala has given you that strength, then you will do it very easily. If you haven't got that strength, then don't try these things. They can go somewhere. One Muazzin or something, he's saying, Main toh Hindu ho jaunga, main toh Hindu hunga. Ustaz Ramdhani was making wuzu. He had washed his right foot and he still washed, couldn't wash his left foot. So he went there and came one slap. So Hindu kal banna hai to aaj ban jao, Islam ko aap logo ki zarurat nahi hai. He said, astaghfirullah, la ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, main musalman hu, main kabhi aisa nahi kahunga. One slap was enough to bring him back. Ek tamache se wo musalman phir ho gaya. But now you can't go and try that. He'll give you 10 tamachas. You can give him one tamacha, he'll give you 10 tamacha. So now he gave one tamasha and brought him back. Gave one slap and brought him back. Can you imitate that? You can't imitate that. You must have that strength. See, I'm saying you is that you've got that potential, that capacity, you do it, it's all right. You don't have the capacity and you won't try and imitate, it doesn't work out. So we're talking of this Abdul Rahman going to Multan, and now this yogi is trying to cast a spell. And I think it's rebouncing onto him. He's casting and it's rebouncing, like the bullet is shooting and that bullet is coming back. So he says, I must go and see this person. Who is this person yet? The thing is just rebouncing back onto me. Even this, tum kon ho, kaise ho, kahan ja rahe ho? Tum main Abdul Rahman hu, Multan ja raha hu. Kya kehte ho? Main kehta hu, la ilaha illallah. And that la ilaha illallah, he made one zarb. He struck, and he struck on the heart of the, with that frame of mind, that he's striking onto the heart of that yogi. But he struck with such force that man went bad, he went mad, he went berserk. He couldn't contain it. That Hindu yogi couldn't take it. With such force he struck, that this man couldn't take it. He says, hey, don't go in that direction, there's a man here, his name is Abdul Rahman, he's going to Multan, and he says, La ilaha illallah. So that person that was like an obstruction for people, he used to rob people of their faith. You know, with this spell, he used to rob people of faith. So this murid, he made him to go and sort of propagate his work. He made him his agent to go and propagate. Everywhere, he's just going, the whole town is saying, don't go that road here. Don't go that road. There's a Muslim there. And he says, La ilaha illallah, don't go that on that road. So he made him to propagate, made him the agent. But in the meanwhile, now this is the point that Hazrat is bringing about, see. In the meanwhile, he sees that current that he had, you know, that current, that charge that he had, that current is fading away. He was really charged, he was moving with a tremendous charge. And the charge is fading away. See. So now he says to himself, what must I do? I don't see the charge in me. I came and I left with power I left. I left with a lot of charge, with a lot of zeal I left with. Now the charge has gone down. So the right thing and the sensible thing to do is to go back to the powerhouse. So he comes back. Sheikh sees him and he's annoyed with him. Sheikh says to him that I sent you to Panipat or I sent you to Multan. Where I sent you to? This Jamaat was dispatched to Joburg, not to Cape Town. Why you went to Cape Town? The Jamaat said, no, we need to make them all Muslims. Can you say that? You can't say, no, we sent you to Joburg. We gave you one itinerary. Why didn't you follow the itinerary? So the Sheikh got very upset with him. Now to get him back onto that line, you know, to get him back onto the line, he kept him here, the Khanqah again, 40 days. Keep him back on the line. He got him back on the line, now he sends him. So don't go anywhere, just go straight to Multan. And now at his hands, on his hands, 80,000 Hindus accepted Islam. You know, to convert one Hindu, how difficult it is. Hindus, not easy to convert. They are very, very stubborn in their faith. Very stubborn in their faith. Whatever they are, but they are very stubborn. They won't just convert. 80,000 people he converted one shot. He went there, one mission, 80,000 he got. You see, there are a couple of things that you learn from this one incident, a couple of things. One is to understand this akabir, your elders, what is their mansha. To follow their direction after that. And then the third thing is, what makes you lose the type of charge? You have a charge in you, and the charge, many times you see, the charge, I'm losing it. So what are the things that make you lose that charge? This is one thing, where you're contradicting their teaching. When you're in conflict with the teaching, it's one type of thought that they are passing on to you, and you are not in keeping with that thought, inconsistent with the thought, so you find gradually that charge in you is weakening down. Now you begin to think, now why is this weakening in me? You know, why is this happening to me? So sometimes it happens out of sin, and sometimes it happens because you're not following their directions. As Muhammad Qasim Nanutwi rahmatullah alayh, when he started the madrasa in Deoband, then there were some people that were opposing him. There was one Mulvi Qasim also who was against the madrasa. His name was also Mulvi Qasim, but he was opposing the madrasa. It happened that there was a fine, there was a penalty of approximately 1,000,000 rupees. Now that time 1,000,000 rupees was big, very big money. Man is getting a salary of 5 rupees and 10 rupees, you know, whole month's salary, and here he's got a fine of, where is he going to get that money from? So he's running helter skelter. He went up to Mawlana Fazlur Rahman, Ganj Muradabadi. I got this penalty, it's coming on to me. So Mawlana Fazlur Rahman asked him, but you know, you, where are you from? So I come from near Deoband, all these places here, Deoband, Gango and all that, I come from these places. But then why did you go to Gango then? You left Gango and why did you come to me? He says, no, Aqidat ne mujhe aapki taraf khinch le aaya. The faith that I've got in you, the confidence I've got in you, has pulled me towards you. So Mawlana Fazlur Rahman says, the whole world can make dua for you, it's not going to work out until Mawlana Gangohi doesn't make dua for you. Now Mawlana Fazlur Rahman is a mustajabud dawat. His duas used to be answered. And he is saying that the whole world can make dua for you, it won't be answered until Mawlana Gangohi makes dua for you. Now 1,000,000 is sitting on his head. What to do? Marta kya na karta? Man is in sakrats, he'll do anything. So he comes to Mawlana Gangohi rahmatullahi alayhi. Gangohi rahmatullahi says, usne mera to koi nuksan nahi kiya, madrasa ka nuksan kiya, madrasa khuda taala ka hai, tauba kar le, main dua karta hu. He hasn't gone against me, he's gone against the madrasa, and the madrasa is not my property, it's Allah Ta'ala's property. He makes tauba, inshallah, make dua for him. He made tauba, and within a week, 2 weeks, he received a message that all the charges have been dropped. So this charge that we have, sometimes this charge diminishes, it weakens down. Why it weakens down? Because we're not keeping, not maintaining the same thought. Sometimes it's on account of sins. Sometimes it's, we have left that thought, the thought that we're supposed to be getting from our elders. We have gone to a different track. Now we see things are not working out. I don't see the charge. I see something else in me now. But you have diverted, you see. Now you have diverted, so you don't find that type of feeling coming. The second incident he mentions about Mawlana Thanibon Rahmatullahi Alayh, when he had come for some ilaj to Saharanpur. See, Thanibon and Jalalabad, all these places, all small gums. So if you need to go for any treatment, then you'll come to a center. Like how, if you're living, for example, in Pakrani or something, and you need to be hospitalized, so you'll come to Durban, where Parklands and Augustine's all are in the center. You won't get that type of specialized treatment there. You'll have to come to the center here. So Saharanpur is like a center, and these are all small suburbs, you see. So Mawlana had come from Thanibon, he'd come here for some ilaj. And Hazrat Shaykh Hadith Rahmatullah Alayh, he prepared some food, it's called talbina, like a soup, you see. And he wrote the virtue of it from the Hadith as well. And he says that I had consulted your Hakim, and according to the advice of the Hakim, your doctor, I have added the ingredients. You know, what is in conforming with your health, etc. I had added the ingredients. So inshallah, it will be good for your health. And the Hadith also has encouraged this. Now this is what Hadith is showing here. That Muhammad Thanvi Rahmatullahi Alayhi, he knew about this Hadith, not that he didn't know about it. And Hazrat Shaykh Hamza wasn't teaching him Hadith. It was like an ocean of knowledge. Well, Thanvi Rahmatullah himself was like an ocean of knowledge. But their mizaj was like this. They must speak about Hadith, they must spread Hadith, they must talk about it all the time. All the time. To the elders, to the young, to the contemporaries. But they wanted this to happen all the time. All the time, wherever it was. But that Hadith must flourish. Small hadith, big hadith, hadith that a person thinks it's important or not important, but I must talk about Rasulullah Sallam and let his words flourish in the world. So this was their mizaj, this was their tabiat. So Hazrat Muawad Thani Rahmatullahi had written a reply, and he says, the Mahbubi, Muhibbi wa Mahbubi, my friend, my beloved. He says, Tune Josha Muhabbat me. حدود کی رعایت نہیں کی قائدے کی رعایت نہیں کی out of excessive love for me you were not careful about the limits you didn't take care of the shari limits. Now I am scared if I want to drink this and I don't have a liking for it, for example naturally I don't feel inclined towards it, then I will be disliking something that has come in the hadith. So what will be the position of my iman then? Something has already been recommended in hadith, and naturally I don't have a liking for it. You know, now what's going to be the position of my iman? So I have kept your talbina here, that soup I've kept it here, I haven't taken off it yet until I receive your reply. So Allah replied again. He says, there are three components to this reply. He says, number one, sometimes the food is excellent, right? Food is excellent, but it is dependent on the person that is preparing. Koi pakane wala koi anari hota hai, a stupid person. He doesn't know how to prepare it, he prepares it, makes a mess up of it. But the food itself is excellent. The food itself is excellent. Number two, even if Hazrat doesn't approve of it, doesn't like it, then normally medicine is a little bit bitter, right? And that's the essence of medicine, that it's bitter. So it won't be going against the hadith, because that's the nature of medicine. And even if Hazrat dislikes it, then there is a hadith which says, يَكْرَهُهُ الْمَرِيدِ, that the medicine is such, this food is such, that the sick person doesn't like it. So it will be in conformity with the hadith. It will not be in conflict with the hadith. So Hazrat had eaten of it. But then Hazrat didn't say that I enjoyed or I didn't enjoy it. To my mind, what comes, Hazrat didn't say that he liked or he didn't like it, because he had to be very safe. Because the hadith says that يَكْرَهُهُ الْمَرِيدِ. If he says he liked it, then he'll be going against this hadith. If he says he doesn't like it, then he'll look at it from a different dimension, that you don't like what the hadith has recommended. So he remained silent in that hold. So this was that mizaj of this Buzurgan al-Din, and their love and their ardent desire to allow ilm to flourish, to allow hadith to flourish, Rasulullah's teaching, they wanted it to flourish all the time, wherever they are. Hazrat Muawad Thanvi Rahmatullah, he had some qaida by him, right? And that qaida, or people feel that he was a very strict person, very hard person. But it wasn't like that. One was a man who had a very, very tight schedule. I imagine a man writing 1,000 kitabs, right? So if you write so much of kitabs and all that, then you need to have a very tight schedule. Very, very tight schedule. If you don't work yourself, within a schedule, you can't do such things. You have to program yourself. This time to this time I'll do this, this time to this time I'll write that. And for writing you need to have a clear mind. If your mind is all, you know, is caught up with everything else, then you can't write. You need a very clear mind to write. So Maulana had some laws in place so that his work is not interrupted. Right? Not that he was hard by nature, very soft and very easy to work with person. But then he had to have some systems so that he can do the type of work. If he had no system, then he can't do any work. So the system was not because of his hard tabiat, but the system was in place so that that system will enable him to do a lot of work. There are people that used to try all type of tricks with Maulana also. And Maulana had to put these systems in place because of these people. One person came to the Khanqa, right at the entrance of the Khanqa, and he came with three big buckets, you know. Matkes, it is translated as buckets. He got it on a porter, and at the Khanqa now there is some altercation. He's saying 2 rupees and he's saying 3 rupees. Anyway, they settled it. Maulana came to the entrance. So yes, Maulana asked him, "What is this?" "So I brought this balushai." Balushai is a type of a mitai, like how you have, you know, mitais. This is a type of mitai. "Did you take permission from me?" "So no, I did take permission." Where is the letter? "Oh, this is the letter. The letter says that you can only bring 3 balushais. A balusha is like the size of one nankhatai, you know, nankhatai. The one balusha is so big. And he brought 3 buckets. But this is it. "But I asked you to only bring 3 pieces. See, I only brought 3 pieces. 3 big bucket size pieces he brought. He says, "Mera ji chahata tha ki main aur laun." Like, Hazrat ne 3 ki ijazat di. My heart was desirous of bringing even more, but Hazrat only allowed me to bring 3. So only, you know, with a heavy heart, I only brought this 3. So people used to try all type of tricks. See? One person came, and he had a sugarcane plantation. So he brought some gur. You know, gur is, but I don't know what they say in English. In this, some of the spice shops, you get it, it's a form of a sugar. They use in medicine, Indian medicines, also a type of a sugar, but it's red in color, you see. So he brought that, and Hazrat got that sugar, so the people that were sitting around, Hazrat distributed, everybody ate of it. So now he says, "Hazrat, now, main toh murid hunga, I'll become your murid, Hazrat." Hazrat, "Na, mere yahan toh kaida hota hai, waise main kisi ko murid nahi banata hu, I don't just accept you for bayat straight away." So Hazrat, "Then give my sugar back then. Return my sugar." So he turns around and says, "Well, had you given that sugar so that I accept you for bayat?" "Yeah, I did that for the same reason." You're open. It's not hiding around anything. So Hazrat accepted him for bayat. Then he says, "Hazrat, I need some wazifa also, you know, some mamulat." Came some mamulat. "Hazrat, I need some tabarruk also, some barkat also, to what is tasbih and game." Then Hazrat, "Me khidmat bhi karunga." So Hazrat opened his leg, stretched his leg, and he pressed Hazrat's legs, and then he left. Hazrat says, "Ye toh bade pukhta naseeb ke aaya." He came with a, his naseeb was right for him. He came with a fortune, took everything and went away. So people try all these type of things. One Maulana should write letters, long, lengthy letters. Or kaam ki baatein bahut kam hoti thi. You know, real sly things, it was very little. But lengthy letters, 5, 6, 7, 8 pages. But the kaam ki baatein bahut kam hoti. The other told him, "You know what? You must only write 3 lines. Only write 3 lines. Don't write more than 3 lines. Because kaam ki baatein is only about 3, 4 lines. He's writing so big letters." What he did? He took a long page, 2 meters long, 3 lines. So obviously, as I said, that ye to hushyari istimal kar raha hai mere khilaf. He is trying to be smart against me. So I send the letter back. And he says, okay, now in future, you only send a letter in the size of your nose. Size of the, not your nose, size of, or size of a nose. So someone said, isko kaya ke naak ke barabar, taang ke barabar nahi. So it's a ghanimat hai. Just now, he will interpret it as the nose of an elephant, you know. Being such a big long letter. So people used to try all these type of things just to get through it. He had to have some system in place. Otherwise, like I say, if he did not have that system in place, he would have not been able to accomplish any work. He definitely had to have some system, some way, some mannerism, some approach. How is he going to do it? But with all this, there were exceptions also. You know that the system was for everybody. He knows now, I have to have some systems for the general people, I need to have some system. But there will be certain people that will be exempt also. So he made exceptions for that. They asked Hazrat Maulana Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi, what was it like in your first visit to Thana Bhuvan? What was it like when you visited Thana Bhuvan first? So I came to Jalalabad, because the trains used to stop at Jalalabad, and then I had to take my luggage and all that to Thana Bhuvan. So I got all my bedding on my head, and I moved. Now here I come to Thana Bhuvan, the Khanka doors were all, gates were already locked. So I asked the guard, so the guard said, no, the yahan ka qaida ye hai ke jab darwaze band ho jate hai, to phir usko kholte nahi. When the gates are locked, then we don't open again for anybody. So he took his luggages and he went. He found out Mohammad Thayyar's home, residence, and he put out his bedding there and he lied down. In the morning, Mohammad has seen this. Kaun? Hussain Ahmed. Yaha? Kya? Nahi, Hazrat ke khan ke mein to kisi gharib ke liye ko sone ki jaga nahi hai. A stranger can't come and sleep. Hazrat took him straight. This man is an exception to the... This is a qaida, this is a system. At this time, the Khanka doors and the gates will close, you know, for security reasons, whatever it is. But this man, if he comes at any time of the day or night, then you open the Khanka gates for him. So, if there was a system and there was a law, then there were some people that were exempt also. There were exceptions also to the law. It was not that more stringent and hard. It wasn't like that. People just look at one, two isolated incidents, and they pass a judgment against Mawlana. One person brought a cucumber, you know, from his farm. He brought a cucumber and he presented it to Mawlana. So Mawlana asked him, did you obtain permission before you brought it? Mawlana's system was that you must take permission and then you bring it. And the reason, there was a lot of reason for it. Like I say now, someone is giving a gift with other niyat or make me murid. So now he doesn't know the person, so he says, you can first take permission. And sometimes it happens that there will be 50 people, and 50 people give the one and the same gift. See, 50 people give one lungi now. You got 50 lungis, what are you supposed to do with it? They want you to wear it. And everybody brought the same thing, brought lungi now. Like Ramzan comes, everybody give khajur. Now 50 people bring khajur, what are you going to do with it? So, on the one hand, you want the man to use it. And then, if he doesn't use it, you feel upset. But now, what is he going to do so much? So, the right way is then ask. So, you don't feel upset that man is not using it. He's not appreciating our gift. So, you ask. And he'll tell you, don't bring this, bring something else. In place of this, bring something else. That you may appreciate, that I may appreciate it, and you will be happy that I have used your stuff. See? So, when it comes to the... Hazrat asked him, did you obtain permission? He said, no, I haven't obtained a permission. So Hazrat told him, but didn't you read that notice there that's at the entrance? You know, go and read that notice and then come. So no, I already read that notice before I could come. I had already read that notice that I must take permission before I bring anything. So Hazrat told him, then you have caused pain to me, you have caused pain to me that you read the notice, then to you came and defied. So saza honi chahiye, you need to be penalized for it. Kya saza ho? What must be the penalty? Hazrat, whatever you suggest. So Hazrat says, or you go and read that notice that's at the entrance. I read that notice already. You caused more taklif to me now. You caused more taklif to me that I asked you to go and read. He said, no, I already read it. So is taklif ke liye aur kya saza tajweez honi chahiye? Now the taklif that you caused to me, now what punishment and penalty? So Hazrat jo tajweez kare, whatever Hazrat suggests, well, go back to your farm and then come and read this thing here and then come to me. So he says to Hazrat, why must I go right to the farm and go around circling on the farm and come back here? So Hazrat said, aur taklif di aapne, you've caused all more pain to me. That koi saza honi chahiye, some punishment. So yeah, whatever Hazrat suggests. What do? You go back to your farm and don't come back. So all these type of nuts were coming here for them. So Hazrat had to put them straight, otherwise he wouldn't have been able to do any work. Like I say, no work he can do. This working around these people here, and he can't do any work. So he had to have some system in place. But anyway, what we are showing here is that the akabir, the buzugan ad-deen, and their zawq, their thinking, their thought process, how they thought, how they reasoned, how they rationalized, how they worked, so that we can imitate them. We can imitate them. Not that now we go and put in stringent systems like this. No. Moriah had to put those systems because of his work. You don't have the same type of work. You can't say, no, I need to have the same system like Mulana. He had to put that type of systems because of the type of work, the nature of work that was before him. This is only 10:51.